This feature of the Science News Radio Network is coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And once again, it's so good to be with you as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science. Nanotechnology, open innovation. Today, in the first half hour, we have Kay Goss. She's the keynote speaker at IEEE 2017 International Conference on Homeland Security and Technologies. That's April 25th, 26th. This is the famous and historic International Conference on Homeland Security Technology Gaps. And Kay is she's an internationally recognized expert on world disaster management. As a matter of fact, she's president of the World Disaster Management Organization. And she's a lecturer, she's an author on emergency management and general resiliency. Kay believes we need more leaders. She said there's not enough specializing in world disaster management, and she's going to get into a lot of stuff. She's going to talk about, nuclear, you know, disasters, of course, hurricanes and tornadoes and earthquakes, you name it. She is an expert on how to manage world disasters, and she speaks all over the world. So you're going to enjoy Kay a whole lot, and you're going to be able to see her firsthand at the International Conference on Homeland Security. It's going on the 25th and 26th of April, as I said. You want to know more about that, go to our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a link, and that'll take you to the website, and you can find out all about it. And, of course, we're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of, visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set in the second half of the program. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. But in just a minute, we're going to get to the telephones and our key guest today, Kay Goss. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Well, today we have with us by telephone Kay Goss. She is not only the keynote speaker for the IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference going on April 25th and 26th, she's also president of the World Disaster Management Organization and has an extensive background. Want to prepare you before we go. Kay wasn't able to get to a landline, so we had to use her cell phone. So there is some cell phone noise that isn't quite broadcast quality, but it's clear enough that we can hear her, and we're so glad to have her.
Thank you, Colonel. I really appreciate the opportunity to visit.
Well, Kay Goss is an internationally recognized expert. She's a lecturer, author on emergency management and general resiliency. She has a terrific background, of which you can readily see if you will go to the website for the Homeland Security Technology Conference, which incidentally is IEEE, that's IEEE-HST.org. And you can also go to our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a link, and that will take you to the website, tell you all about the conference and everything else. But right now, Kay, we're so glad to have you with us. Can you give us a preview? You're a keynote speaker. Can you give us a preview of what you're going to be presenting at the conference?
Yes. As I said, you know, we promote emergency management as a profession and really help in every way possible to build a profession. I've been in it since 1983, and so, you know, I've had quite a perspective on the growth of the profession over time. I started in Arkansas as a senior assistant for intergovernmental relations for then-Governor Clinton, and when I looked at emergency management in our state, we did not have emergency managers in every county at the time. But by the time we left, 12 years later, we had emergency managers in every county. And when I came to FEMA, I found that there were 2 degree programs across the country. And so I launched the FEMA Higher Ed program. And I'm proud to say that now there are over 300 colleges and universities across the country that offer these degree programs and certificate programs as well. And so emergency management is a profession that requires collaboration. And so I'm really excited to have this opportunity to speak at your conference, because the greatest challenge that we're having now is in the area of communications and innovative technologies, and our outreach to the private sector is so important at this point in the growth of the profession for those next steps.
Okay, well, emergency management, that's preparation then for everything from terrorist attacks to hurricanes and tornadoes and earthquakes and all sorts of different things. Is that correct?
That's right. We call it an all-hazards approach. And, you know, it's been interesting during the 30 years plus that I've been working in it how, you know, those disasters have expanded and have increased. And we call it the new normal, really, because now local and state emergency managers and professionals across the board are challenged in many ways now that they were not in the 80s.
And I see that you've worked closely with other countries, projects at community college in South Africa, evacuation technology in Northern Ireland, the University of Ulster Business School and the Center for Excellence in Disaster Management at Istanbul, at their technical university in Turkey. What? Tell us about some of these things. What were the more interesting ones?
Okay. Yeah, those were all quite interesting and quite different from each other. The partnership with Istanbul Technical University started in 1999 when they had 2 really severe earthquakes and thousands died and millions, probably billions of dollars of property losses.
Mm-hmm.
And so several of the professors from Istanbul Technical University came to George Washington University here in D.C. And by happenstance, they had invited me to come to this particular meeting. It was called the International Emergency Management Society, and George Washington University was hosting it. So I sat down at the table, and I was introducing myself to the gentleman who was sitting next to me, who turned out to be a professor at Istanbul Technical University for 6 months a year and Florida International University for the other 6 months a year.
Okay.
And so he, as we talked, I told him that I was at FEMA and I was in charge of national preparedness training and exercises, and he said, well, he said, that's very convenient. He said, you know, we've had 2 horrible earthquakes. And I said, oh, I've been reading about it and so concerned, because I read about the deaths and that kind of thing. And I said, how is your education system and training system for emergency managers operating? He said, well, we looked around the country and nobody was offering training. And so we want to do that at Istanbul Technical University. And I said, well, I may be able to help with that, because I just launched a FEMA higher ed program like 5 years before that. And it was so exciting, because those programs were coming on board around the country, about 1 a month. And so I said, well, you know, let me know if I can help. And he said, I will. And so the next day I'm at my office working, and one of the secretaries comes in and says, Miss Goss, there are 11 people here from Turkey who want to talk to you, and they say you invited them to come by.
Oh, wow.
And so I was I was very pleased that they were quick to follow up. And so we signed an arrangement where the FEMA Emergency Management Training Institute would provide, in cooperation with the USAID, who actually paid the expenses for FEMA officials and for emergency management, fire service, police leaders from around the country to go talk to their engineering professors. ITU is a university that has about 23 different areas of engineering, and that's their main focus. And so our folks went over and talked to meteorologists, geologists, electrical engineers, mechanical, civil, earthquake engineers, all of their folks, and talked about how to apply emergency management in their particular specialty areas and how to teach it. And, you know, some of the key books, and we provided 15 to 20 FEMA publications for them to get started. And within the year, they had translated all of the FEMA publications into Turkish and had spread them around the country to all of the highest ranked, at least, emergency management personnel in the country. And they had started offering courses. And by 2002, of course, the end of our administration was in 2001, but by 2002, they had established the Center for Excellence in Disaster Management. And so at that point, I started going over to teach the capstone course at the center for the master's students that were coming through. And it was mostly an effort to bring together the professions of emergency management and business continuity and what we now call homeland security.
Oh, boy. Fascinating background. I know that when disaster hits, everybody, you know, up until the time it hits, people say, well, it can't happen. It's not going to happen here. I mean, it happens other places. That's
right.
What goes on in California. That's what goes on in Spain. That's what goes on in you know, in Turkey or in Istanbul and in
somewhere else,
but not here. So all of a sudden there's a disaster and everybody's caught flat-footed and don't know what to do. But what you're saying is that you're preparing these people so they can immediately know what to do. But do you find a lot of conflict with the different agencies? I mean, for instance, the police departments are very territorial. Do you find that somebody, the more than one person's stepping up and saying, I'm in control, you know, I've got things under, and you've got the interagency fighting?
You know, there is some of that, but it's, I guess my greatest challenge and my greatest concern is that at the local level, you know, the various departments all have some responsibilities in emergencies. And, you know, so during disasters, they work together pretty well. It is during the time between disasters that I'm concerned, because the way our system works, and I don't know a better way to do it, but it causes a little bit of friction because they do compete with each other for budget funds, you know, in the time when they're in preparedness and mitigation mode. So, you know, that is a little challenge.
Well, how do you mitigate all that? I mean, how do you do it on a preemptive strike, I presume. You've got to have everything in place so it can run smoothly for the event that an emergency happens. And leading up to it, if you've got all this infighting, how do you overcome that?
Well, one of the ways I waged a kind of national campaign, which was around hazardous materials, because that does those incidents do involve fire service, but they also involve police, and they involve sometimes public works, and, you know, maybe several departments, and now also a more recent development is Homeland Security, so those folks are involved as well. So I try to get them working as a team and supporting each other rather than competing. And we had our process on hazardous materials was to have someone who was a specialist in that from FEMA go into a community and meet everybody, meet all the folks at the fire department, all the folks at the police department, and all the folks at the public works department, and meet the city council, and meet the mayor, and everybody, and then kind of put together a list of needs that they had, equipment in each department, or, you know, training that they needed, or exercises that they needed, or that kind of thing, and go work through that with them, and then go with them to the city council and to the mayor, and ask, or, you know, and ask in a team kind of fashion. So sometimes I was thinking if they go through that around hazardous materials, they might really get to like each other and see how they can partner, you know, rather than battle each other over budgets.
Yeah, hazardous materials, you would get, of course, any sort of a terrorist attack could be, you know, a dirty bomb, or it could be chemicals, or it could be something else, and then so you're all prepared because you're in an earthquake zone, and everybody knows what they're going to do when the big one hits, and then all of a sudden they find out that instead of that, it's a gas explosion or a dirty bomb is hit. So then do they know who's the expert that they call then? Is there an expert for each one of these different things? Because the guy that knows what do with a gas explosion may not be the same person that would know what to do with a tornado hit or something.
Well, on hazardous materials, we had a great chief of hazmat in Chicago who was always saying to me, he said, you have to remember to tell these guys that if you can't do hazmat, you can't do terrorism, because terrorism is just hazmat with attitude.
Mm-hmm.
So we would always kind of laugh about that and then go on about our business. But, yes, hazmat is one disaster that almost every community has. So it's not geographical, like, you know, I grew up in Tornado Alley. Or when we moved to D.C. in 93, everyone said to us, well, you're safe now because you don't have tornadoes up here. But, you know, it turns out in 2004 there was a big tornado here.
Yeah.
Or you don't have earthquakes here. And then 2011 there was an earthquake here that did tremendous damage. In fact, the Washington Monument's now closed over. It opened for a couple of years, but it after being closed for a couple of years because they found that they had not been able to repair all of the damage that was done in that earthquake in 2011.
Yeah, well, the biggest, really, the biggest fears come and the biggest challenges come from something that you don't expect. You say, okay, I'm in Tornado Alley, so we've got that pretty well covered. But meantime, you're up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan that never has tornadoes, and all of a sudden a tornado hits, which actually has happened, you know. So,
well, and, you know, Dallas, you know, I'm just always worried about Dallas these days because the weather seems to me like it's much more fierce and colder in some cases. And, you know, that's because the jet stream that used to go through maybe northern Missouri and across the plains and up, you know, across Pennsylvania and New York and New Jersey and up to Maine or whatever, is now dipping all the way down to Texas.
Yeah, of course, you know, of course, here in Dallas that tornadoes are outlawed in Dallas. They're allowed to go south of us at Waxahachie, and they can go north of us at Wichita Falls and along the Red River, but they're not allowed anywhere near Dallas. And sometimes they approach Fort Worth, but that's as close as they can get because, you know, they're just outlawed here. That's just the way it is.
That's right. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, I bet you are. Well, what have we missed? What haven't I asked you? What would you like to drive home to these people that are going to be listening to you at the keynote speech at the Homeland Security Technology Conference? What's maybe a big takeaway that you want them to come away with?
Well, I want to give them a full report on the development of the profession and hope that they will be as pleased and excited about it as I am, because we are making tremendous progress. And like I say, you know, with the higher education is a small part of it, but we're also at the conference that we have every year at FEMA, the first week in June, we have about 8 countries participating. And that seems to grow a country or two a year now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a global effort. And this is the kind of thing, you know, where we don't recognize boundaries or borders very much. And also disasters don't. So we know we need to work together on those things.
There's a number of foreign visitors that come every year to the Homeland Security Technology Conference, really from all over the world. And I presume then that you will have messages for these people. They can profit from hearing the things you have to say, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, one of the exciting things about it is that we have to work hard to keep in this position. But right now, the U.S. is the thought leader in emergency management, homeland security, and business continuity. And, you know, the standards. We now have more than half the states have been accredited through the Emergency Management Accreditation Program that's run by the Council of State Governments and the National Emergency Management Association and the International Association of Emergency Management.
Do you see
any... So we're rapidly professionalizing.
Okay, I was going to ask, do you see any threats from what we experienced in Japan with Fukushima or Chernobyl a number of years ago or something? We've got a kind of a robust nuclear industry, and nuclear, of course, is saying, hey, mm-hmm. we're the clean energy, we're the ones, you need to build more nuclear power plants. Do you see any dangers from that?
Well, yes, you know, one of the programs that I ran while I was at FEMA was the Radiological Emergency Preparedness Program. And, you know, sometimes communities did not necessarily want to advertise that they were having exercises, you know, in those communities about what to do in case of a meltdown, that kind of thing. But I think the nuclear industry is quite safe. You know, I had an opportunity to visit Chernobyl. And it's interesting, that site there is actually run by or managed by EMERCOM of Russia, which is the FEMA equivalent. Mm-hmm. And they have, adjoining that area, they have a hospital where there are still people that are bedridden from that explosion that occurred in 1986.
Yeah.
That are still hospitalized, and they check their vital signs every day, and they check their temperature every day. So they have quite a catalog of the impact of nuclear meltdown on people.
All right, Kay, I want you to hold that thought for the second half hour, and we'll be back to talk about that just a little bit more. Kay Goss, President of World Disaster Management and keynote speaker at the IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference coming up real quick in April. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Whom in the Den of Strangers will we meet today?
Anne Rand. Tell me what a man finds sexually attractive, and I will tell you his entire philosophy on life. Show me the woman he sleeps with, and I will tell you his evaluation of himself.